Hello, everyone, and welcome back. After nearly a month off the air, the TBH Sports Pod is back and better than ever. We've got a lot of things to break down, from the NFL to the NBA, Formula One, and beyond. A lot of action going on that we've missed over the last month. It's just been a busy month overall, I think, for everybody, but especially here in the offseason, preparing for new jobs and a lot of new things. And speaking of new things, we're going to have a lot of guests that have been on the show before that are coming back that are going to need to be reintroduced, as it's been a busy offseason, not just for me, but for a lot of the people that consistently appear on this show as well. So without further ado, let's get right into it. We've got some NBA games going on tonight, the play-in tournament, and here to help me break it all down is Matthias Weilman, who is now the lead broadcaster for the Leedsburg Lightning in the Florida Collegiate Summer League. Something about those East Coast summer baseball teams, Matthias, you and I are going to have a lot of fun this summer, I get the feeling.
Yeah, I just can't stay away. You know, the only jobs I applied to were in North Carolina, where we spent some time. I just can't stay away from that southern half of the Eastern Seaboard, I guess.
Yeah, it's just like that sometimes. You end up in the same place no matter how hard you try. Of course, the last time Matthias was on the podcast, him and I were roommates. Right now, a little bit further away than just down the hall. Matthias currently in New York, and I am currently in Colorado. But a lot of good basketball action coming up starting tonight. We'll have a couple of games going on in the NBA. And again, before we get into this, I just want to ask, you're a fan of this format, right? Because I really kind of like what they've done with this play-in tournament, getting a couple of different teams in and really kind of shaking up the seedings a little bit.
100%. I mean, if you go back the last couple of seasons at least, but it has been pretty consistent over the last decade, two decades, that the 8th seed in the East, the 9th seed in the East, you know, those bottom couple teams, a lot of times they're under 500. And I mean, let's put it bluntly, a lot of times they just suck. And they win maybe one game between combined the 7 and 8 seed, and they just don't do well. And the whole point of this tournament, they really wanted to get more engagement for their fans during the regular season, and that's exactly what they're doing. I mean, there were so many games down the stretch that, I mean, you're a Spurs fan, and you enjoy watching Spurs Kings. But other than that, like, there were people that were genuinely interested in watching Spurs Kings, you know, a week before the season ended, because it had implications. So I think it's been a huge success because they got the excitement for those teams down the stretch. And I mean, look, we have two really good games today, two really good games tomorrow, and they're exciting because it's just like baseball. It's the wild card. It's not quite the postseason, but it's enough postseason. It's win or go home. I mean, who doesn't like win or go home?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Elimination basketball is always a good time. You don't get to see it as much because typically, again, all of these are series-based, but, you know, you get to this point in the season and things do get really exciting. The other element of it that a lot of people have talked about before we get into these matchups is that it does kind of not completely take away the idea of tanking, but to a degree, I mean, you do still have something to play with. There's a chance to give your fan base an opportunity to witness some playoff basketball, and that's something that I think a lot of people can agree is a good thing. So, taking a look at the play-in tournament right now, we've got a couple of games coming up today, a couple of games coming up tomorrow, and starting here on a Tuesday, we've got games between Indiana and Charlotte and Boston and Washington. Taking a look at the way this bracket plays out, these are both going to take place in the Eastern Conference. The game between Charlotte and Indiana is an elimination game. As I understand it, the game between Washington and Boston is not. The winner of that will move on to play Brooklyn as the 2 seed. The loser of that game will play either Charlotte or Indiana for a chance to take on the Philadelphia 76ers. So let's go ahead and get into that matchup. And before we do, Matthias, I do want to be completely honest. I do want to come clean with the audience. I have not watched as much basketball as I probably should have at this point, and when it comes to some of these play-in teams, I am not as well-versed as I am on some of the teams that are in the actual tournament that have already secured their spots. So, to be honest, I'm going to defer to your better judgment a little bit on this. It's not that I know nothing, it's just that I don't know as much. So, let's talk Charlotte and Indiana. This looks like a really fun game on paper. This is a Charlotte team that has obviously collected a couple of new pieces over the last couple of seasons. They are not the same team that they were 3-4 years ago when they were down in the basement of the league, and they have an opportunity to move on. But Indiana, a team that has been in a position like this before, certainly has more postseason experience. What is kind of your overall takeaway with this matchup, and what's the biggest thing that you're going to be keeping an eye on as these two take place tonight in an elimination game?
Well, before I answer that, I will say to all the listeners of the TBH Sports Pod, I really tried. I mean, there'd be a Tuesday afternoon where I'd say, hey, Tyler, you sure you don't want to watch Wizards Blazers? And, you know, he said, no, and said probably some profanities of things he'd rather do. I don't really blame him. I don't know who doesn't want to watch Kings Hornets at 10:30 p.m. on a Wednesday, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. I kid. things that I want to watch in this game, it's who the hell is going to get the first stop in the game? Because these are two teams that are not good defensively. They're two teams that really like to get out and run. You can say that the Pacers are going to be pushing the pace in this game.
Gosh dang it.
if I'm not mistaken, they're the fifth. They play the fifth fastest basketball in the whole league. And the Hornets, who were 32nd last season, play at the 18th, or the 30th, sorry, play at the 18th highest pace, which is pretty run of the mill, but that's a pretty big jump to make after you get LaMelo Ball, who obviously is going to push the pace. So, you know, things to watch in this game are going to be what team can get out in transition and run after missed baskets. Because the fun thing about these two teams, too, and the fact that they're playing, is that they're both in the top five in the percentage of their shots that come in the first 6 seconds. The Hornets are fifth. 16% of their shots come in the first 6 seconds. They're also fourth in effective field goal percentage in those first 6 seconds. So it's not like they're taking bad shots. They're taking good shots, and they're making it. And then once you get into the last 18 seconds, they're near the bottom of the league. So there are two teams that want to shoot early and often. It's going to come down to what team can get their half-court offense set the quickest, because neither of them have had success with that all season long.
Sure. I mean, I guess the other thing that's interesting with this is that, again, in a normal year, in an average NBA season, these are two teams that would not have made the postseason. Now they both have an opportunity to move on. You look at the other side of this bracket with Boston and Washington. One of these two teams will be facing Indiana or Charlotte. Let me just ask you, between those two teams, which between Indiana and Charlotte do you think is the better matchup for a team like Boston or Washington? And which one of those two teams do you think has the chance to potentially make some noise, if at all? Because, again, it's the worst kept secret in the league that the Eastern Conference is just not as strong, and the further down you get into it, when you get into teams like Indiana and Charlotte, you know, really probably not expecting these teams to come out and do anything against Philly. But again, between those two, which do you think has the best chance to potentially survive in advance if they can make it out of this first game?
Caris LeVert, it was announced about 30 minutes ago, is not going to get to play against the Hornets because of health and safety protocols, which is such a bummer because he's been good for them since they acquired him. Earlier in the season, after they traded for him, he had to get the physical, and they found a lump on his kidney, I believe, so he had missed a lot of time. So it has just been just a gut-wrenching season for Caris, and obviously, you know, glad he was okay when they found that lump the first time that he was cleared to play again. And it just sucks now that they're in a playing game and they can't play. And like you mentioned, they lose tonight and they're done. Honestly, with Caris LeVert out, I'm going to go with the Hornets. I had done my own little podcast this morning, and I had picked the Pacers just because it's going to come down to the fact that they have the best player on the court, and that's Domantas Sabonis. And I just think there's way too much inexperience on the Hornets' side. I think they might end up crumbling a little bit this season. And at the end of the day, they're playing with house money. No one expected them to be here at this point. On the other side, I'd really love to pick the Celtics because they have the best player on the court tonight in Jason Tatum. That might be a little bit of a toss-up between him and Bradley Beal if Beal is 100%, but the fact of the matter is he's not. So the Celtics will pretty easily have the best player on the court. The only problem is, who the hell's going to step up after him? I mean, the supporting cast has kind of fallen off a cliff for the Celtics this season, and with Jaylen Brown done for the season, that's probably going to be their downfall.
Yeah, and that kind of segues us into this other game. So again, talking about the second play-in game in the East between Boston and Washington, the winner advances to face Brooklyn, the loser advances to face the winner of Indiana and Charlotte for a chance to play the Sixers. And yeah, these are two teams that have had very interesting routes to get to this point. This is a Boston Celtics team that a couple of seasons ago people were talking about, like, they could be the next great dynasty in the NBA. They could be stepping up and taking over for the Warriors. And then it kind of just didn't happen. You have a lot of talent. You had a lot of guys that were capable of creating their own shot, but they just haven't been able to put the pieces together. This season has certainly been a disappointment. Injuries have played a role in that. On the other side of things, you have a Washington Wizards team that has kind of come out of the woodwork here at the end of the season. They went on a big winning streak near the end of the year, a couple of bad teams. But again, they pick up the wins necessary to put themselves in this position. And like you said, Bradley Beal, not necessarily at 100%, but one of the best players on the court in this game. So when you're looking at two teams here between Boston and Washington, and a Washington team that, let's face it, has not exactly had a reputation for playing a lot of defense recently. What is the biggest X factor in your opinion between these two teams as you look at a matchup between the two and a winner takes a playoff spot game, a one game situation coming up later tonight?
Mm-hmm. Before I get to that, because absolutely, we have to talk a lot about this Wizards defense. You had mentioned before about the tanking, right? I don't want to steal the conversation another way, but you know, the Wizards are the perfect example of why the play-in game works, because at one point they were 19-33. You want to talk about a team that went through a lot this season. They didn't play for, I think, 2 weeks because of COVID issues. Beal's been hurt. Westbrook's been hurt. Thomas Bryant got hurt at the beginning of the season. Their first-round pick, Denny Avdija, got hurt. Like, it has just been a shit show of a season for the most part for the Wizards, and then they're 19-33, and I mean, Tyler, at that point, you know, as a basketball fan, you're like, okay, maybe it's time to tank here, guys. Like, you have a pretty good team, just get as good of a pick as you can, and they went on a run, and here they are in the play-in tournament, and heck, I mean, if they might not make the playoffs, but it's impressive that they've even gotten to this point. To get past the Celtics, you got to remember that it's playoff time. Jason Tatum, no longer 19 years old, but he has a lot of experience. This is a Celtics team that has a lot of playoff experience. I mean, Jason Tatum might be young, but he was in the Eastern Conference Finals his rookie season. Kemba's been there before. They're missing Gordon Hayward at this point, who's on the Hornets now. It would have helped. Tristan Thompson has a ring. Like, there are guys that have been deep in the NBA playoffs in the past. The Wizards have a better defense than they did when Bradley Beal at the beginning of the season said we can't guard a parked car. They've been better, though, over the last month and a half. That might be one of my favorite quotes ever, by the way. It's been better, but it hasn't been great. For the Celtics, though, it's just going to come down to who's going to help Jason Tatum. He scored 50 points multiple times this season. You know he can do it himself, and it's not like the Wizards exactly have a lot of bodies to throw at him with that kind of size, but the Wizards play a lot of drop coverage, so when another team runs a pick and roll, their big man's going to be hanging out in the paint. If Kemba Walker can't make his pull-ups, which has dropped down from 47% to 39% this season, what will they go to? No Jaylen Brown anymore, who's having an all-NBA season? It's going to come down to, can someone else help Jason Tatum tonight?
Right. I think on the other side of it, too, when you look at the supporting cast here for this Washington team, that's interesting as well, because Bradley Beal has obviously been a part of this game. But look at the other guys that they're relying on. It's Russell Westbrook, who was not part of the team last season. It's Rui Hachimura, a rookie this year. It's Thomas Bryant. It's Davis Bertans. I mean, again, this is a team that really does not have a lot of postseason experience. But more to the point, they're still gaining experience now in their first season playing together. And I think for me, the combination of that and the combination of Brad Stevens exists is why I'm going to give the edge here to the Celtics. Now, I'm not saying that this is a Celtics team that I feel extremely confident in winning this game. But at the end of the day, you know, if the two tiebreakers are going to come down to team chemistry and coaching in a situation like this, I do trust the Celtics to get it done. I don't trust them to go anywhere after that, but I feel like that's not too far off base. I mean, feel free to correct me here, but those are the two things that I'm really looking at in this game. You can play the X's and O's all you want, but at the end of the day, if you've got those two things, I feel confident in your ability to win in a game like this.
No, I mean, I don't think you're that far off there. I mean, these four teams that we've been talking about, it's possible that none of them are very good, and probably none of them will make noise. But they're not terrible teams. Like, they're in this spot for a reason. Like, the Celtics should be higher. They're really bad at the end of games, which is a problem because Jason Tatum is, I think, in the top five in scoring in the fourth quarter. They've just been bad in really close games. I personally am going to go with the Wizards, just because they're the hotter team right now. I think they're 15-5 over the last 20 games. I'm concerned about Bradley Beal's hamstring, though. He came out yesterday and said that it was a hard-headed decision for him to play, that he probably shouldn't have, and it was an important game, and they had to beat the Hornets. They would have ended up making it in anyway, because I think the Bulls lost. But Bradley Beal looked closer to like 50% than 100%. And the reason that is so concerning for me, because obviously he scored 31 points a game, and that is a big loss. But also, you know, one guy that you mentioned before, Russell Westbrook. I'm not a Russell Westbrook hater, but I'm a Russell Westbrook realist. If you have a good defender like Marcus Smart, does Boston, and if you can put him on Bradley Beal and completely stifle him, that's what I tried to say, because his hamstring isn't 100% and Russell Westbrook takes matters into his own hands, it's very possible that it goes really well for the Wizards. It's also very possible that Russell Westbrook completely throws the game away for them. So that's why I'm a little concerned, because if it comes down to a Russell Westbrook game, that's a high risk, high reward there for the Wizards. I'm going with them anyway, just because I don't think Jason Tatum's going to get any help. I also am rooting for the Wizards, because if they win, if the Wizards end up winning, or sorry, I want them to get the lower seed, because if they end up getting the, I'm going to restart this whole spiel.
Go for it.
Okay. I'm rooting for the Wizards to get the seventh seed. If they're the seventh seed, which they would get if they win tonight, they will play the Brooklyn Nets in the first round, which means we would get Russell Westbrook on the Wizards against Kevin Durant and James Harden, two of his former teammates, both of which are no longer on the team that Russell Westbrook played with them on. And I think, I don't know if it would be a bloodbath, but I mean, that is just like NBA ratings nirvana right there. So there's some really big possibilities here that the NBA can just absolutely hit a grand slam with their play-in tournament in the first year.
Oh, yeah, and I can already see the promotional video, too. There will be a lot of OKC love in that. By the way, an OKC team that has somehow managed to ruin everything that they've... I don't know. It's crazy that a team could have Durant, Harden, and Westbrook, and just, you know, again, they made it to the finals, and then just the entire thing imploded. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who ends up in that 7 seed to take on Brooklyn. It's also going to be interesting to see who ends up in the 8 seed. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're taking Washington in this game, which would drop Boston down to play against, you think, Charlotte or Indiana, you said?
I think at this point it'd be Charlotte. I want to pick Indiana. I still see a possibility for that to happen. But I think without Caris LeVert, their offensive creation outside of Sabonis just kind of dips a little bit there.
Okay, so I've got Washington against Charlotte. You've got Indiana against Boston in that game. So who are you taking to make the 8th seed and take on Philly really quickly, and then we'll slide over to the Western Conference?
At that point, I'm going to take the Celtics. I think Jason Tatum will... The gap between him and the second-best player in that game will be Sabonis. But then I don't think that Indiana has as many pieces after that, especially if Caris LeVert still can't play, which we don't know how long he'll be out for. At this point, I'm going to take Boston to end up taking that number 8 seed. And then I think Philly and Brooklyn are both going to wipe the floor with whoever comes out of there.
I completely agree with you there. I've got different teams in different spots, but very similar to what you had. I'm taking Boston to make the 7 seed and go up against Brooklyn, and I'm taking Washington to fall down to that 8 seed and take on Philly, and I'm expecting both of them to go absolutely nowhere. But let's talk about some games that are a little bit more interesting over in the Western Conference. These games will take place tomorrow. We've got a game between Memphis and your San Antonio Spurs, and this is your team, so I'm just going to completely turn it over to you. This is a matchup that I'm sure you are, I don't know if I would say looking forward to. You want to talk momentum. This is a Spurs team that has not exactly looked good as of late. I'm looking at the numbers right now. I don't know how many out of how many, but they've won 2 games out of their last, what is that, at least 12. And on the other side, you've got a Memphis team that has picked up some momentum here at the end of the season. So what is kind of your biggest fear here as a Spurs fan? And again, what is kind of the biggest X factor that you're looking at between these two?
Well, ask this. Am I allowed to curse on this podcast? It's not a big curse.
Go for it. Go for it.
Okay. You ever seen that meme of that guy standing in front of the blackboard and he says, in conclusion, and then you fill in the blank?
Uh-huh.
I've seen a meme of that sort circling around. It says, in conclusion, both of these teams are beating our asses. So that tells you where Spurs Nation is kind of feeling when they were watching that Grizzlies-Warriors game on Sunday. I'm excited that the Spurs are in and that they have a chance to make the playoffs. Again, this is like the wild card in the MLB. Like, it's still a successful season that you basically made the playoffs, but it's not quite the playoffs. Look, I'd rather play the Grizzlies than the Warriors just because I don't want to touch Steph with a 10-foot pole, and I want to see Lakers-Warriors, but it's tough. I mean, since Derek White went out for the Spurs, they have not been able to shoot the ball well from three. That's one of their best wing defenders, and one of just, you know, that's their safety valve from deep, because starting DeJounte Murray and DeMar DeRozan, neither of which shoot from beyond the arc, and it's not only that they don't shoot well, they just don't shoot in general because that's not their strength, and then you have a big man in Jakob Poeltl who doesn't shoot at all. He doesn't shoot from outside of the paint. I mean, it's just not a lot of spacing there. The Spurs team has kind of fallen apart a little bit, and their defense has suffered from that as well. This is a Grizzlies team that is better. However, it's a Grizzlies team that relies a lot on Ja Morant because the other guys in their starting lineup can't really create their own shot. Jonas Valanciunas is very good down low, but he's not a creator. He can stretch the floor, but that's not his specialty. I do think he still might give the Spurs a little bit of trouble down low. But if Ja Morant can't make his shots, and that's what we saw against the Warriors on Sunday, they're just going to go under every single screen. And he's still good enough that he can create going downhill and get something going there. But for the Spurs, it's just going to be, do you just dare Ja Morant to shoot all game long? And does the Spurs' luck run out again? Because it seems like every time that they play Ja Morant, he shoots like 7 of 10 or like 10 of 11 from beyond the arc. Like something absurd like that. And I mean, that's the hole in his defense, in his team, right? Sorry, let me restart that. That's the hole in his play right now. It's his ability to pull up and get those, you know, step-back jumpers off the pick and roll when teams are dropping against him. And it's hitting those in-transition, in-rhythm threes off the pick and roll. If the Spurs can luck out and he doesn't make his shots and they play well, they absolutely can advance. After that, we'll see.
Well, and that's kind of the danger, too, with a guy like Ja Morant. Because, yeah, when he's missing those shots, you see him cool off a little bit. But when he starts to hit him and he gets into a rhythm, there are Ja Morant games. And that is not the kind of game that I feel like the Spurs are really suited to win. I went back and went ahead and just got the numbers on this really quickly. I am a big momentum guy. I think in a lot of sports it's important. This is a Grizzlies team that's won 6 of their last 8. It's a Spurs team that has lost 10 of their last 12. And again, like you mentioned, matchup-wise, yes, there is certainly a route here for the Spurs to advance, but I still feel like the safe pick right now is with Ja Morant and the Grizzlies. Really quickly, before we move on to, I think, the most exciting game here, what is your pick in this game? And not even as a Spurs fan or, again, just as a general fan of the NBA, as a guy who likes to do a lot of analysis, if you're not a fan of either of these teams, who are you picking in this play-in game?
I will say, be careful with the momentum because the Grizzlies had a cakewalk at the end of their schedule. I think over their last 10 games, they played 2 playoff games. And that was against the Mavs and the Knicks, in which they split, and the Spurs had the toughest schedule down the stretch. However, you know, all signs are pointing towards Memphis. They have the best player in the game, in Ja Morant. They have no momentum, maybe they don't have as much momentum as the Spurs are really just sliding towards the end here, and they match up better. That being said, I'm going to go with the Spurs because I think it's close enough, honestly, that my X factor in this game is going to be, what does Greg Popovich throw at Ja Morant? I think he's going to see some things that he hasn't seen. I think he's going to be really overwhelmed, and it's important to note that every single game that the Spurs played against the Grizzlies, they had LaMarcus Aldridge, and when you have LaMarcus Aldridge dropping back in coverage against Ja Morant, you're toast. It's clipped. So it's been a little better in that category for the Spurs since Aldridge left. I'm going to go with the Spurs just because it's close enough, and I think that Pop does just enough to make Ja uncomfortable.
All right, fair enough. So that brings us to what is undoubtedly going to be the best of these games. I don't know how this happened, but I'm totally here for it. We have a game coming up between the Lakers, now with LeBron, And the Golden State Warriors with Steph Curry, who at this point, if he doesn't win the MVP, I don't understand what you're supposed to do about that. He has been putting up obscene numbers over the course of the last...
He's not the MVP. I will not stand for that.
Yeah?
Jokic has been the MVP for the last...
I mean, Jokic has been, especially in the absence of Jamal Murray. But again, I mean, you're talking about a team here in Golden State that probably isn't even in this position. You take away Steph's numbers. This is a team that may not even be in a spot to be in the play-in tournament. They could be down below the 10 seed. I think it's closer than some people think, but you're probably right. I mean, Jokic probably over Curry, but I do think it's closer than a lot of people are giving it credit for. Point being...
That's fair.
Point being, unless you want to make, I mean, you can make a further point on this as far as the Jamal, or as far as the Nikola Jokic case. Again, this is where me not watching as much Nuggets basketball kind of hurts my angle on that, I suppose.
It's just, what can Jokic not do is what it comes down to. He's shooting 57% from the field. On three attempts per game, he's shooting 39% from deep. He's shooting 61% on twos. He averages over 8 assists per game, over 10 rebounds per game, and 26.5 points. And Steph has been fantastic, but it's been the late stretch for Steph that has gotten him into the conversation. And Steph will finish as number two in the standings for the MVP. But, I mean, Jokic has done – he has been the best player in basketball over the last 3-4 months. And I think if Embiid hadn't gotten hurt, it would have really been a conversation between those two. And then it really would have gotten interesting between the three of them. But I think Jokic is undoubtedly the MVP here. And that's no knock on Steph, honestly. I think it's just Jokic has done enough. And yes, the Warriors would not be in the play-in position if Steph wasn't there, and they'd be a lottery team. But on the same token, I think the Nuggets are a lottery team as well. I think between Jamal Murray and MPJ, maybe, just maybe, they can make it into the play-in. But you're talking about a Nuggets team that, if they still had Jamal Murray here, is probably my pick to make it out of the West.
Well, let me ask you this really quick, because I am curious. Do you think that the Nuggets are in a worse position if you remove Jokic, including the Jamal Murray injury? Or do you think that the Warriors, I mean, who do you think sees the bigger drop-off? If you take Curry off of the Warriors and you take Jokic off of a Nuggets team that does not have Jamal Murray, like, which of these, I mean, again, because obviously it's not as clear-cut as that. But I guess my thought process behind Steph Curry is just that he's been carrying his team more with less of a supporting cast this season, obviously with a lot of injuries, than what Jokic has been doing, despite the fact that Jokic does, as you mentioned, do more for his team.
And this is the exact reason why I wouldn't mind the NBA adding like an award, like they do in football, like a offensive player of the year type thing. Because like it's the answer here, I think, is Steph Curry. But in a league that is so driven by three-point shooting and, you know, high-scoring offense and high-octane offenses like that, I mean, the offense runs through Nikola Jokic, too, because he's such a good passer and everything they do is around that hub. But, I mean, you've seen Steph Curry. Like, you can only keep the cork on the top of the bottle for so long. Like, before, as soon as the champagne starts flowing, like, you're not going to stop it. And I think that's why the Warriors would probably be in a worse position. But I don't think that Jokic should be punished because the Nuggets are a better team overall than the Warriors. Because you're talking about, if Jokic goes out here, the Nuggets aren't looking pretty either. I mean, you have Aaron Gordon, Will Barton, and MPJ. And MPJ's been great, but what does MPJ look like without Jokic? I don't know. We haven't seen that yet. And on the Warriors side, it's not really Jokic's fault that the other options would be, you know, Andrew freaking Wiggins and Kevon Looney. And, you know, I'll take away that freaking, because Andrew Wiggins has been good this season, but if you're relying on Kent Bazemore, Jordan Poole, and Andrew Wiggins to run your team, yeah, you know?
Yeah, no, it's not ideal. So let's talk about that team. This is going to be, again, we had a little discussion here on the MVP, but now getting back into this play-in game between the Lakers and the Warriors, and look, I'm telling you, watching LeBron James in his return, it seems like the Lakers are going to be okay. It feels like this is a team, again, maybe they're not going to make a run back to the chip or anything crazy like that, but This is a Warriors team that, yes, Steph has been playing at an ungodly level. And yes, I'm not discounting the fact that he could come back and do it again. But with LeBron back in, this is a Golden State Warriors team that, correct me if I'm wrong, will be either without the services or not at 100% from Klay Thompson, James Wiseman, Kelly Oubre, and Damian Lee. I mean, this is a team that is basically going to, it's basically going to be the Lakers against Steph Curry in this game. I guess my question to you is simple on this one. Do you think Steph has enough left in the tank? Does he have enough magic to keep this game close? Or do you think the Lakers, now that LeBron is back and feeling okay, are going to just completely roll over a Warriors team that is basically playing 1v5?
I don't know if they're going to roll over them, but I think the answer to does Steph have enough in the tank for this is unequivocally yes. I mean, the guy is just absurd. The things that he does on a court, and we've never seen before. He is just an absurd player, and he is going to go down as one of the most unstoppable offensive forces that we've ever seen in the NBA. Is it going to be enough? I don't think it is. It's going to be entertaining as hell, but I think that the Lakers have enough. I mean, this is even without LeBron, even without AD. They were a good defensive team. I think they have enough in the backcourt to at least bother Steph, because, again, you're not going to stop him. You just want to make him as uncomfortable as possible. KCP has a lot of experience, you know, running around screens. He's not a bad defender. Alex Caruso might make an all-NBA defensive team this season. He's been fantastic defensively. They have guys that can run after Steph and make him uncomfortable. Is that enough? I think it probably will be, just because, like you mentioned, LeBron looks okay. He looked a lot better this time coming back than last time coming back. And an ankle is tricky. It's like we talked about with Bradley Beal. An ankle and a hamstring, those are things that you don't really want to mess with, because you tweak it a little bit and it can become significantly worse in a hurry. LeBron looks okay. AD looks okay. It's going to be how the Warriors decide to match up on the Lakers. You put Kevon Looney on AD. Do you put Draymond on AD? Do you put Draymond on LeBron? Do you put Wiggins on LeBron? Do you put Kent Bazemore on LeBron? Because, I mean, no one's going to stop LeBron, but you got to figure it out, because the drop-off from Draymond Green to your second-best defender is pretty big. And it's not like you really want to put Kevon Looney, who's a good rim protector, out in space on AD. So I'm going to be really interested to see the chess match between these two. I think at the end of the day, though, the Lakers are just going to be too much. I mean, this is a championship contender right here. They're the defending champions, and they're back at full strength, and they're in the play-in game. I mean, they don't belong here. It sucks for the Warriors, but I think regardless, we're going to end up seeing Warriors and Lakers end up in the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't think either one of us was actually going to entertain the idea that whoever loses out of this game between Golden State or the Lakers would actually fall to the Spurs or the Grizzlies. No offense to your Spurs, no offense to Memphis. It doesn't seem like the kind of thing that would happen. And I tend to agree. I think this is the kind of game where the Lakers win and they're going to slide in and play, as crazy as this sounds to say out loud, these words in this order, the 2-seed Phoenix Suns. That's going to be very entertaining. And on the other side of things, I think that the Warriors, if they do drop down and have to play Memphis or the Spurs, will likely win that game and slide in as the 8 seed to play against that Utah Jazz team. I'm going to make one more take here really quickly, and I don't necessarily know that this is an unpopular take. I think, honestly, being in the play-in game and being in this situation might actually be a good thing for the Lakers, because I feel like it gives you an opportunity to get LeBron and AD and this entire team at full strength back and clicking and firing on cylinders, and it lets you get them a little bit of this playoff momentum that they need to come in, as opposed to trying to still put the pieces together here at the end of the season with everybody back and getting everybody to gel again on the court. I think nothing does anything better for chemistry for a team than a postseason victory, and that's something the Lakers could certainly get here. But I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I don't completely disagree with that, honestly. I mean, at this point, if LeBron's okay health-wise, and it kind of seems like he is, sure, give him that runway. Let him get into the playoffs hot at that point. I mean, it's going to be one game if they win that they're in, so it's not going to do too much for them. But, again, at this point, LeBron and AD have barely played together this season. They already have a championship under their belt, so it's not like they need it for chemistry, right? That's a concern for Brooklyn, for example, because the three of them haven't really played together. They barely played together. But LeBron and AD are comfortable with each other. This is mostly the same team. Apart from Dennis Schroeder being there, it's basically the same team. So I think they'll end up being fine. This sucks for Phoenix, man. because I like that team. They're a lot of fun. I don't know if they're going to beat the Lakers. I mean, a lot of people had doubts about them already. It just sucks for Chris Paul, and it sucks for Devin Booker and the rest of the Suns teams.
I feel like
it's a bummer because I think the Lakers will end up beating them. Honestly.
As a guy who spent a couple of years in Phoenix, and it's a guy who knows a lot of Suns fans, I know for a fact that all of them are rooting so hard for Golden State to somehow pull this off. Like, the dream scenario for Phoenix is that they get to face the Warriors instead of the Lakers, but like we talked about it, just not 100% sure that that's going to be, you know, even really a possibility. It's going to take a lot of Steph. It would take maybe one of his best career games, I think, to come out and beat this Lakers squad at full health. But again, we'll see. It'll be interesting. A lot of games going on. Again, two play-in games today, two play-in games tomorrow, and then we'll get into the actual playoffs, and we will have a full playoff preview coming at you later this week once we have the bracket set. Not sure 100% if Matias will be a part of that or not, but just in case, wanted to give you a chance here, Matias. Go ahead and give us your NBA Finals pick here, and give us maybe a hot take, maybe a team that you think could make some noise that some people may not be paying super close attention to here.
Wow. As weird as it sounds, I honestly haven't thought about it that much on who my championship pick is, honestly, because I've just been so just ingrained in the play-in, I didn't even think that far. Right now, gun to my head, I have to pick someone. I'm going to go with the Brooklyn Nets, honestly. I think they're going to do enough to piece things together, and they're going to be okay. It's weird because no one out of this whole field you look at and you say, yeah, they've got to be the favorites right there. Because someone has to. I mean, even look at the number one seeds. Like, we've seen Philadelphia kind of falter a little bit, and Ben Simmons hasn't made as much of a leap as you would have hoped to be super confident, but they're going to be a tough out. Utah, it's the first time here. Teams can figure out how to beat them if they can run Rudy Gobert off the court. They're not untouchable. Same thing with the two seeds. I'm worried about Brooklyn and their lack of playing time together, but they'll probably be fine. And then Phoenix on the other side, I don't know if they're the strongest two seed we've ever seen. And it goes even down to the three seeds. Hell, I mean, Denver's really good, but they don't have Jamal Murray. That'll probably catch up with them. And then Milwaukee is really good, but have they done enough in the regular season that they're comfortable, you know, switching and doing those things that they needed to fix to get there? I'm not sure. I think right now, gun to my head, I have to go with Brooklyn. I think my potential surprise team.
Please do it. I hope you will. Please do it. I want you to do something so bad. I don't know if you're going to do it, but I really want you to.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What are you thinking here?
I think Utah ends up going down in the second round.
Okay.
I think we end up seeing the Sixers in Brooklyn. My hot take, throwing out a take that I know is going to be wrong, but hell, I'm going to say it anyway. My hot take is that we see Brooklyn and the Knicks.
Yes!
In the Eastern Conference Final.
He did it!
Book it, write it in Sharpie.
He did the thing!
Marker, baby.
I am so happy. I wanted the Knicks take so bad. So bad. In all seriousness, last question for you here, and then I'll let you go. I know you got a lot of stuff going on today. But again, given the lack of playoff history really recently for any Knicks team that I can remember, and the choking constantly in the postseason for the LA Clippers, which of the four seeds do you think has the chance to make it further in this? If you had to, again, gun to your head, if you had to say one of these teams is more likely to advance further than the other between the Knicks and the Clippers. Because obviously the Clippers have the better roster. But the Clippers also cannot make it into the conference finals. It's just not possible. It's not a thing that the universe will allow.
It's funny because let's not act like the Knicks are, you know, some sort of storied franchise here over the last couple of decades. I'm still gonna pick the Clippers just because, like you mentioned, they have a better roster. I do think they can beat Dallas, especially if Porzingis isn't going to play. Like, I think they'll be fine there. Honestly, I might pick the Clippers to beat Utah, honestly. Especially if Serge Ibaka's back and he's, like, actually healthy. I think the problem with Utah is that they don't have the size on the wings that's going to end up hurting them. Like, they don't have anyone that can stop LeBron. Like, it'll be Royce O'Neal who will be on him or Bogdanovich. And then if you have two of those guys and Paul George and Kawhi. Like, let's not forget that playoff Kawhi Leonard is a different beast. We talk about playoff LeBron, and for a good reason, but playoff Kawhi is like a 35 point per game guy. So I think I'd still pick the Clippers there to go a little further. I hope we see a Clippers Lakers Western Conference Finals, because we were robbed of that last season. And I think the path might be a little clear here. And I'm kind of talking off the top of my head because I feel dumb, but I haven't really thought about what I think is going to happen just because I've been so focused on the plane and just taking it game by game. But I, gun to my head, that's my hot take. Knicks are the champions. I'm kidding.
Knicks tape for the win. All right. Well, Matias, yeah, it was good to have you on, my guy. Thank you so much for coming in again. The introduction here, I guess technically season two, if you want to call it that, after a 1 month hiatus here on the TBH Sports Pod. And good to have you back. And I'm sure we'll be talking more about some basketball very soon.
I'm glad to be back, Tyler. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. That'll just about do it for us. That is all the time that we have. I want to say thank you once again for tuning in. And again, apologize for the hiatus. Just a lot of stuff going on, but we will have a lot of good content coming up here in the future on the TBH Sports Podcast, so stay tuned for that. Again, Formula One with Monaco coming up this weekend, the NBA playoffs, a full preview, and a look at the Champions League final featuring Man City and Chelsea. It's all coming up on future episodes. But that'll about do it for us. For Tyler Henry, for Matias Wildman, want to say thank you to you again for tuning in. And that'll do it for us here on the TBH Sports Podcast.